championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, and you guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. Today we're going to be going over the big bowl game for Texas, the first BCS bowl game since 2009, the Sugar Bowl against number 5 Georgia. We're going to have on Brandon Adams from Dog Nation Daily, the big podcast for Georgia Bulldog football. But before we get into that, we're going to go ahead and give our takes on the Sugar Bowl and what's going on for Texas. Also, we know that right now one of the big storylines is the quarterback situation for Texas going into the next year, with KC Thompson and Cam Rising putting their names in the transfer portal. Man, we live in a dystopian future now, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, whenever I hear portal, I think of a Good Neighbor Stuff video.
But we're going to go ahead and save that stuff, save all the good stuff for after the bowl game. We're going to go ahead and focus on what is coming up next, the biggest thing that's coming up next, which is the Sugar Bowl, of course, and then assess the situation in the quarterback room after the Sugar Bowl. So let's go ahead and get into our thoughts on the Sugar Bowl. Joe, it's been a while. It's been a while since Texas has been in the BCS. I said 2009, and Texas is finally there. They have a shot at a 10-win season, but they have to get through maybe one of the best teams in the nation.
Yeah, I was thinking about this when doing a little bit of Georgia, you know, I guess research, and just kind of thinking, even though this Georgia team is ranked number 5, and I think rightfully so, with, you know, 2 losses compared to the top 4's, you know, combined, what, 1 loss, they're still probably the second best team in the country. This is a really good Georgia team. I think what you see in talking to Brandon is that, you know, he sees so much of them that he also sees how apparent the flaws are. But I think you and I kind of both agree that, you know, in our kind of limited viewing of Georgia football this year, that they're pretty darn good at pretty much everything. But I think different than Texas has seen before this year. Not to say I don't think Texas can kind of hold their own, but this is easily the best team Texas has faced all season. And that's even, you know, possibly without, you know, the backup 5-star quarterback in Justin Fields, and without, you know, as was announced, you know, yesterday, if you're listening to this on a Friday, without DeAndre Baker.
Yeah, and I guess if you're an Oklahoma fan, you might, and well, why are you listening to this? Go listen to Bama podcast or something.
Hello.
But
go listen to Unofficial 40.
If you're an Oklahoma fan and you're offended by us saying that Georgia's better, I guess you could say that Oklahoma and Georgia, if you were to compare them, Oklahoma is a lot more explosive and they're a lot more
lopsided. If you're an Oklahoma fan, are you that obtuse about your defense?
Right. Like, yeah. Georgia is a much more balanced team than Oklahoma. Oklahoma very explosive on offense, and Texas did a wonderful job of limiting the explosion of Oklahoma. But Texas hasn't seen a team this well-rounded and this talented yet this year, or in quite a while.
No, not at all. And it's going to be interesting to see. These are, I think, the like I'll mention, the big bad SEC is very overblown, as at least as far as it goes with the depth of the league. But Georgia is the epitome of the big bad SEC. They're the East Division champs. They gave Alabama a good run for their money in back-to-back years. They, more than, you know, I guess 10 other teams in the conference, they're more of the they epitomize that big bad SEC, you know, reputation that a lot of the country wants to give them. I think they're rightfully so too. Like I said, this is probably the second best team in the country, maybe third behind Clemson. But this is a big physical team that likes to beat you by being a bigger physical team, and Texas wants to do the same, but they don't have the bigger physical guys yet like Georgia does.
Yeah, and now that we've hedged our bets sufficiently, Georgia, the one thing they haven't faced in Texas is the wide receiving core as deep as Texas has, and a quarterback that is more of a running back like Sam Ehlinger. Well, not saying Sam Ehlinger is specifically a running back, because he's a lot more than that, but a guy who will run you over like Sam Ehlinger, a dual threat quarterback that is very much fullback-y. So they're going to be facing a much more up-tempo offense than they've seen this year, except for against Missouri, and Missouri gave them some problems this year. The lowest post-game win expectancy of the season for games that they didn't lose. So there are a few things that Texas has on their side of the field that Georgia has yet to see or to sufficiently take care of in the games that they have played.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a way different challenge. It's definitely one that Texas is up for. I think the style that Tom Herman wants to be built at Texas lends itself to them being able to play with a team like Georgia, but playing with a team like Georgia and beating a team like Georgia are two totally different animals.
Yeah, and lots of teams have played with Georgia for maybe one, two, or even three quarters, but Georgia just seems to have so much depth on their roster that they end up outwilling you or outplaying you or just having that much more gas in the engine towards the end of the game where they can just kind of run away with it. Ask South Carolina, ask Missouri, ask a whole slew of teams that they've beaten this year. But let's go ahead and take a look at the optics of this game, because we'll get into what Texas is facing with Brandon. But talking about the optics of this game, Texas right now 9-4. If they win, I mean, obviously, right, the optics of Texas football change tremendously. They are
definitely
they next year they're going in with title hopes, which will be crazy to manage as a Texas media market, as a Texas team, Tom Herman. It'll be kind of chaotic, but on the other side, if Texas goes 9-5 and loses their last two games, kind of limping out the season after getting to as high as the number 6 in the nation, it'll be also interesting to see how Texas and how, you know, us as media members will try to manage expectations going to next year.
Yeah, I mean, 10-4 is it's double-digit wins. It's winning a New Year's Six bowl game against a top team in the nation. It's bouncing back from, you know, losing your opportunity at the Big 12 championship, which you wanted to be at all year. This is a new goal. This wasn't one of the goals of Tom Herman's that he constantly repeats over and over again before his team. This is, you know, a New Year's Six bowl is a little bit different territory for him, I think, motivation-wise. So it'll be interesting to hear how he kind of gets his team going. But, you know, 10-4 means you're 10-4, you did all that. 9-5, it's, you know, it's hard to say it's not an improvement over last year, because, you know, it 100% is. Last year you were 6-6 after 12 games. This year you're 9-3 after 12 games, you lose your 13th and you have a chance at a 14th, which not very many do. But if you go out and lose the last two games, no matter how good the competition is, whether they're playoff teams or just on the fringe of playoff teams, it's still losing your last two games of the year. And, you know, I don't have the schedule in front of me. Can't really think of, that'd be losing two of your last four, so it's not that bad. But anyway, the overall point, it's still losing two of the last your last two games of the year. And that's not something you really want to do going into an off season where you have some higher expectations next year, a little bit more experience in some key spots, specifically at quarterback. You want to win this game. 9-5, it won't be the end of the world. It won't be the best thing, I think you can say. But I am kind of one of those believers in that tidbit that, you know, Mac Brown lost a Big 12 championship in his second year. Yeah, to Nebraska, went to the Sugar Bowl and lost it to a really good team that was left out of the national title picture, and he ended up 9-5, and some good things happened after that. The recruiting, you know, this is going to sound so dumb. The recruiting similarities are similar. I don't know why I just said that, but that's all I could really think of. And then, you know, the on-field results will kind of be a little bit similar. And that set Texas up. I can't remember how 2000 went specifically, but I know 2001 was a solid year. That set Texas up for quite a run. We'll see if that happens the same way. But, you know, and if maybe Tom Herman can inch past his predecessor in his second season.
Right. And to give your point some more teeth, Joe, if Texas does lose to Georgia, they'll be 3-4 coming out of the bye week in week 8 of the season. So that means that they started off, what would that be, 6-1, and then they had a losing season in the second half of their year. That wouldn't be great optics-wise, but also, like you said, they're shooting for something that wasn't previously a goal. The goal was to win the Big 12 championship, and obviously, I guess if you're going to win the Big 12 championship, you're getting into a BCS bowl, but now they're here, and they have to face the top team in the nation. You would be hard-pressed to find a Texas fan who is saying, if Texas doesn't beat Georgia, then I'm off the Tom Herman bandwagon and I'm not going to watch Texas sports anymore and blah, 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 angry internet fan comments. But again, you know, it's not great to go out and lose to teams like Oklahoma State and have close games against Texas Tech and Kansas. So the second half of your season could have been better. I guess it just depends on how you lose to Georgia in the end.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, wins and losses are wins and losses, but how you lose to the, you know, a top team in the nation would make a difference a little bit in how you want to go into it. Maybe not to these seniors, but to at least to me. I mean, you know, if it's getting your butt whipped, that kind of tells you where you're at. But if you're hanging in there with them, as Tom Herman teams are wont to do, it would bode well. But why not go ahead and win it?
Yeah, and this Texas team is really, really hyped for this game. They are going into it. They are very focused. I know we already mentioned the quarterback dust up. I don't know what to call it, but the transfer portal, whatever going on, the Texas team is 100% focused on this game. The outside distractions for Texas are about the same as the Georgia side for outside distractions for Justin Fields. And now I guess DeAndre Baker. If you want to say, okay, outside distractions are going to be playing a factor, then they're pretty much equal on both sides here. So Texas is coming into this game focused. The coaches have had some time to game plan for this game. It's going to be an interesting game. Joe, obviously, I don't think either of us expect Texas to win this game. But for optics of this season, a close loss is good. A win is fantastic, and getting blown out leads to some questions.
Yeah, I think that hits the nail on the head.
Yeah. So, on that note, let's go ahead and bring on Brandon Adams, the host of Dog Nation Daily, part of DogNation.com. You guys can find him on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. Brandon, how are you doing? How's it over there in Georgia? Or are you in New Orleans yet?
No, I'm not leaving for New Orleans until Sunday. So, still in Georgia right now, and I think the excitement is starting to build for the game here a little bit. I think that with early signing period the way that it is now and with Christmas, I think the attention of Dog Nation was kind of somewhat fractured over the last few days. But I think now people are starting to turn their attention to the Sugar Bowl and starting to get ready for what should be a fun matchup between the Dogs and the Longhorns.
Yeah, it's been a pretty crazy few days for Longhorn fans as well, as you know, National Signing Day, but also you have, obviously for Justin Fields as well, but for us, it's KC Thompson and Cameron Rising.
Sure.
So it's the new world order for quarterbacks and the transfer market, but everything's been going crazy. But that does bring up a question of, I know the team is ready for the Sugar Bowl, and they're excited about it, but are Georgia fans excited for it? Because I know Georgia fans, when they travel well. But they've already been to New Orleans. They've already been to Louisiana this year. They traveled well for it. They sold out quicker than most teams do for LSU and then some. But they didn't make it into the playoff. And I feel like that's, for Georgia fans, is kind of a, didn't quite hit the mark this year. So are they excited to go to New Orleans this year, or what's the deal there?
Yeah, I think it's a really fair question. As you said, Georgia's actually already been to Louisiana this year, and when most Georgia fans that traveled to that game, and there were about probably 20,000 Georgia fans that made their way to a Baton Rouge this past October, when that was the case, the home base for most people, including ourselves, being over there, was in New Orleans. So this will be Georgia's second trip, at least for a lot of the fans, in terms of, you know, staying in New Orleans this year. I get the impression that this is not quite the fever pitch that, you know, some other games have been. You know, Georgia traveled in huge numbers to South Bend last year to take on Notre Dame, and it's been a long time since Georgia's been outnumbered in a stadium, other than obviously true road games. I get the impression, based on what I've kind of heard from Texas fans a little bit, I get the impression that the Georgia fans are going to be a little outnumbered in New Orleans, is, you know, kind of what I'm expecting. It just sort of seems like that, that, you know, for all the reasons you mentioned, Georgia's probably not coming out in huge numbers from this. They'll still be a pretty, you know, significant contingent. If you're walking around Bourbon Street and things like that, you're going to see plenty of red and black. But this is not going to be, you know, one of those situations where Georgia just completely fills the stadium the way that it has for a lot of trips here recently.
So I guess, you know, what comes to mind for a lot of Texas fans, and I guess fans of teams in both conferences, is that game a few years ago where Alabama missed the BCS title game. They end up in the Sugar Bowl. Oklahoma ends up in the Sugar Bowl and kind of puts it to the Crimson Tide. I you know, there's a lot of differences, a lot of similarities between those two teams. Do you think that Georgia and Kirby Smart and his coaching staff are trying to make sure, like, hey, this has happened before, especially to a SEC team that missed the playoff or missed the national championship picture against a Big 12 team? Do you think he's trying to warn against that? And you think that'll be effective when you have, you know, the like we mentioned, Justin Fields transferring and, you know, a couple other guys sitting out?
Yeah, I think that's probably something that he's thinking about. I mean, you got to remember, too, Smart was on those staffs, those Alabama teams that lost those, you know, Sugar Bowl games to Oklahoma, and they've also lost to Utah after what would have been the 2010 season. You know, Kirby Smart was defensive coordinator for both those Alabama teams, so he knows what it's like to see, you know, pretty good teams, or at least on what on paper looks like pretty good teams, then kind of lay eggs in bowl games. So I think there is that thought. I mean, you know, tangibly, Georgia ought to have plenty to play for, because, I mean, you know, last time the Georgia won the Sugar Bowl, preseason number one the following year. I don't think that Georgia will be preseason number one next season, but there is a chance that, you know, a nice performance against Texas, Georgia could put a real thought into the, you know, voters' minds and certainly be top two, three, four, something like that for next season. So, you know, it's certainly, you know, a situation where Georgia has something to play for here. It's just a matter of players themselves kind of believe that. And obviously, Texas is a good enough team to beat Georgia, fully focused and fully motivated. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what Georgia does look like in this regard. And I think there's a lot of, I guess, you know, lack of true understanding on the part of many Georgia fans about exactly what kind of UGA team is going to show up here.
Well, I think that's fair, because Georgia is a young team. I mean, they're very talented, but they're also very young. And Texas fans have seen this, especially on the basketball court, because a lot of Texas teams are ridiculously talented, very athletically gifted, but they're young. They have been very young over the past few years, and it lends itself to some very inconsistent play, we'll call it. So yeah. I can definitely understand that standpoint, but let's go ahead and get into the who, what, and the how of the segment. So let's go ahead and start off with the offense here. Georgia's offense has been pretty darn efficient this year, but what exactly, kind of getting to the nitty-gritty technical terms of Georgia's offense, what do they do philosophically to keep that efficiency?
Well, one of the things they've done is they've run the offensive line. This team loves to run behind a big offensive line. They love to use the wide receivers blocking as well. There are a lot of crackback blocks and things like that, and you know, it's one of the things on the recruiting trail. Sometimes some wide receivers don't always, you know, get super excited about playing at Georgia because they're going to be asked to do a lot of that downfield blocking stuff. But Georgia has just been really effective with that. DeAndre Swift, we're getting him more, a little bit running back, you know, is healthier now than he was before. And all of that just sort of leads to a scenario where, you know, Georgia has used the run to set up a pass and, you know, kind of that classic sort of old school pro style, you know, look, very different than what most Big 12 teams do, although I guess not all that different from what, you know, Texas does. And that's kind of how Georgia has gone about its business here.
So you mentioned lining up under center a lot, and you know, Will mentioned about how these, the offense is very efficient. Where do you think that Georgia does best when it's under center with like a fullback and a two tight end or a two tight end set? Or is it when they're a little bit more in their spread concepts to where Holyfield and Swift have some room to run up the middle, or guys like Riley Ridley or, you know, a handful of other receivers and can get into space for Jake Fromm to find him? Where do you think what style do you think Georgia's kind of excelled at most this year?
So they don't really use a fullback much anymore. They're pretty much only one back that's now, although they do have multiple tight ends on the field. You know, I would say, if not the majority of the time, you know, certainly, you know, close to a 50-50 split in terms of having, you know, two tight ends on the field. And, you know, I think that what you've seen from Georgia is a pretty good ability, kind of what pro-style teams want to do, is mix it up. For instance, you know, in the two-minute situation, they go, you know, no huddle, shotgun, hurry up, and they've been pretty effective in that regard. And, you know, in sort of traditional situations, you know, like you said, they got the two tight ends in the field, they got the multiple wide receivers, and they've been pretty good at, you know, putting up numbers really in all kinds of things. I want to say, you know, Football Outsiders, Football Study Hall, you know, they're top five offensive efficiency, I think, in pretty much every one of the advanced metrics things thus far this season. A lot of that's just simply based on the fact that there is so much talent, you know, based on Kirby's recruiting success. They can kind of, you know, kind of go about this thing for the most part however they want to. They, you know, they don't have a real game-breaking wide receiver, but, you know, for the most part, they really have not had much of an offensive deficiency for the most part this year.
Yeah, number three in the nation right now in both success rate and marginal efficiency, according to the Football Outsiders. So let's go ahead and get into where that efficiency comes from, and that's Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm has been very, very good with the ball, making sure not to make too many mistakes. And a lot of it is really due to the style of the throws that they use. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when I've been watching the film, it seems like what Georgia does is they like to throw pretty easy routes and just let their wide receivers do their thing. Is that right, or is there more to Jake Fromm that I'm not seeing here?
You know, I thought that Fromm made a series of pretty challenging throws against Alabama. I thought that Fromm played really well against Alabama. You know, prior to that, for the most part, the stuff that Fromm did was, as you said, just sort of taking advantage of what the defense, you know, would provide. You know, you look at a lot of these mock drafts in the future, and they've got Fromm listed pretty high. I don't know that everybody around the Georgia program necessarily feels that way, the way that a lot of the national media people do, that Fromm's a future first-round pick. He might be. I think the jury's still out on that because, you know, there haven't been as many as you – kind of alluding to those really difficult throws. But two games I would point to where Fromm made some really impressive throws, some big third down throws against Florida, and, you know, some of the stuff, especially in the first half against Alabama, where, you know, he did look more like a quarterback in full, you know, kind of, you know, making some tight window throws and some challenging situations. That was a little bit more of like what you expect to see from a, you know, Heisman caliber first round pick quarterback. And over the course of the last months of the season, I think that you probably saw a little more of that.
Kind of along those lines. I mean, you know, you kind of, it doesn't sound like you think he's a first round pick, and I think that's very fair, but, you know, viewing from afar and in viewing a few things, you know that Jake Fromm's a good quarterback and has played really efficiency this year. And kind of as a result, you know, this kind of dips its toe into the biggest storyline around Athens right now. He's caused 10 stars of quarterback to find or probably find a different place to play. If I know it's probably not an easy thing to summarize very, very quickly. I think the Jacob Eason situation was pretty apparent. He wanted to go A, closer to home, B, succeed Jake Browning at Washington, and he kind of knew that Fromm may have had his number at Georgia. Maybe if in so many words, how was the Justin Fields situation maybe not handled properly, or how was it maybe not handled properly by Fields? I'm sure you've gone on and on about this for Dog Nation. So if there's a podcast to point to there, maybe we can tell our people to go there. But maybe in as many words, what kind of led to Justin Fields, who, you know, kind of has some put up some pretty good looking numbers for his limited action. What kind of led to him not being able to fully overcome Jake Fromm and maybe not get the playing time he wanted to?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, for a lot of your audience, you know, they've probably only seen Georgia, you know, briefly during the season. There's probably a lot about this that they don't know. If you want to go back to the LSU game early October, Jake Fromm did not play well that day. You know, if you go back and rewatch that, you know, film, you're going to see Fromm just really, really struggling. At that point in time, I think the quarterback job for Georgia was kind of up for grabs. There was a bye week the week after that. There was the Florida game, and that's the game just sort of in the month of October where you know, Jake Fromm played well enough. Fields didn't play at all that day. I think it was the first game in his career that he didn't play a single snap in. Fromm played well enough that he kind of put a stranglehold on the quarterback job and kind of never really looked back. Concurrent to that, you got, you know, Justin Fields, who I think a lot of people will tell you that was used ineffectively by Georgia, because when they would bring him in, they would bring him in sporadically for a play at a time, a play here and there. It was almost always as a running quarterback. Really didn't get much of a chance to throw the ball until, like, you know, UMass, which was obviously an inconsequential game. So there was a lot of confusion around why Georgia chose to use him the way that he did, the way that it did. But then in addition to all of that, you know, you have a lot of people going back to last year's signing class saying, why would Fields go to Georgia when Georgia's, even if Eason transferred, which he did, he still got Jake Fromm, who had an outstanding freshman season in 2017. Does he really think he's going to beat him out, you know, in his first year, you know, in Athens? Well, as it turns out, I guess Fields really did. There was a video that emerged from the South Carolina game, which was Georgia's second game of the season, where at the end of that game, Fields could be seen leaving the field already complaining about not getting more playing time. This was the second game of his college career in Georgia's SEC opener on the road. It almost seemed like he expected to be, I don't know, sharing snaps equally with Fromm or something like that, getting a chance to throw the ball more. It was a really weird thing. And I guess it almost just makes you wonder, would Georgia have just been better off if Fields had just gone somewhere else to begin with? Because he seemingly was never happy, even at the very beginning of the season. We have some evidence now that he wasn't happy. Georgia never really seemed to have a whole lot of comfort about how it wanted to use him. Then obviously there's the disaster of the faked punt in the Alabama game, the SEC championship game. You almost wonder if Georgia, no one has gotten out of him and the potential controversy that could still emerge here, would it have just been better if he just gone somewhere else?
Every quarterback thinks that they are the new Tua Tagovailoa. Can never say his name correctly, but everybody thinks of the new Tua, right? Every quarterback these days thinks of the new Tua. So I guess it makes sense that these days these quarterbacks are coming in and saying, you know, I can do it, because they've seen it happen multiple places. They saw it with Johnny Manziel. They saw it with Jameis Winston. They saw it with Tua most recently. So they're all saying, yeah, you know, I can do that. I can go out and do that, because, you know, if you're going to be a good quarterback, you need to have some sort of confidence in yourself to be able to say that. Obviously, as a five-star being told that every day, I understand that, right?
Yeah, well, the one thing I would add to that is I think there's a chance if Fields were to stick around Georgia, eventually he might beat out Fromm, just because Fromm is better than Fields right now, and right now Fromm is the better of the two quarterbacks. But just because that's true right now doesn't mean that it wouldn't be true, you know, in 2020, you know.
Right.
Over the course of time, you know, Fields' prodigious talent could – you know, cause him to eventually beat out Fromm. I just think it was going to be way too much for Fields to expect that to happen right away, especially when Fromm, I think, capitalized on what was a really good freshman season. Now, we'll never know for sure if Fields was capable of doing more and Georgia just wasn't allowing him to do it, or if Georgia was limiting him because he himself was limited. We'll never really know that for sure. But, you know, if he did stick around, I think there's a chance that he eventually – earns the quarterback job for himself, because, you know, when it comes to arm strength and obviously, you know, ability to move around the pocket, there's no doubt that he's superior to Fromm in a lot of those regards. It's just that, you know, Jake Fromm has just been really good at delivering the football the last couple of seasons.
Right. And before we get onto the running back, because I know nobody really, well, it's not really the point of the show to talk about Justin Fields, but one point I do want to make, since we talked about quarterbacks in the beginning of our show, before you got here, is I tweeted out something earlier, and it's just a relic of the bygone era of quarterbacks being patient, where Vince Young was the number one player in the nation, and he didn't get playing time. He wasn't a true starter until his redshirt sophomore year. Then, you know, look at what happened there. So I feel like Justin Fields, if he waits out his time, if some of these quarterbacks were to wait, they would eventually or possibly beat out the starter in front of them and go on to do what they've been hearing their entire life. But let's go ahead and get on to these running backs, because that is really where I was impressed with Georgia. The running backs and Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Swift, those two guys, especially against LSU, well, from what I saw, at least in the beginning, they have so many different tools. Like, I don't know where to start with them.
Well, I will say this about DeAndre Swift. Now, you mentioned the LSU game. I think he actually got healthier after that. He secretly, I guess, had some groin surgery during the offseason, and I think it took him a while to completely recover from that. But the last few games of the season, he was fully healthy, and had he been that healthy all season long, I do truly believe he would have been a legit Heisman contender. I don't know if he'd made it to New York or not. There's obviously, you know, three players had really good seasons this year, but he was just unbelievable for Georgia in the final however many games of the season, Alabama included, for the most part. He is a sensational player. And Holyfield, you know, has come on and had a pretty good year too. And together, you know, once Swift gets healthy together, they do give you that similar feel to what Chubb and Michelle gave last year. Chubb and Michelle, you know, are two pretty special running backs in Georgia lore. So I want to be careful about comparing them too much. But Swift and Holyfield really emerged for Georgia in that final month of the year. And it is a difficult tandem of guys to stop. They're completely different. You know, Swift does have that kind of one-cut lot, ran past people a lot final month of the season. Holyfield sort of seeks out contact. He's a bruising guy. He's very, very strong. I mean, you can look at him and tell he's got a, you know, tremendous physique. They've been quite a tandem for Georgia this year, for sure.
Funny that a guy like Holyfield would seek out contact. I wonder where he got that from.
Exactly right. He lives up to his dad's billing when it comes to stuff like that, the former champion of the world.
But, Brandon, real quick question. When I was watching Georgia film, I couldn't quite tell if they're a team that likes to run inside or run outside. It seems like, obviously, you know, Elijah Holyfield, you go inside, and DeAndre Swift, you go outside. But is there sort of a run style or a run play that they base on their offense on, and then kind of expand from there? I saw things like the inside zone, outside zone sweeps. I saw a whole range of different types of runs that I really couldn't tell what was their go-to, what was their bread and butter.
Yeah, I don't know that they have necessarily, you know, in any kind of, you know, what you might call a tendency when it comes to that kind of stuff. I mean, last year, I think it's probably a little easier to say, you know, Sony was a little bit more of the outside guy and Chubb was a little bit more of the inside guy. Just by, you know, spec, you'd say that, you know, Holyfield would be more of that inside guy for Georgia right now. I don't necessarily think that's the case, though. I think he's bounced outside plenty. So I don't know that I would say they have a real strong tendency one way or another with that. I mean, I do think that, you know, a lot of what Georgia's done with the offensive line, you know, building it up as much as it has through recruiting, has given Georgia the flexibility to do a lot of different things. And they've also dealt some injuries too, that you know, make things a little challenging up the middle. You know, best right guard, for instance, hasn't played a ton. Another guard type player, one of Georgia's five best, has dealt with an injury. So, you know, the interior of the offensive line has been a little bit banged up, which makes inside runs a little bit more challenging. But I don't know that Georgia necessarily favors, you know, one of those over the other.
So I guess from that, kind of moving into the passing game a little bit, with, you know, we talked a little bit about Jake Fromm, but looking at guys like Mecole Hardman and Riley Ridley, who kind of seems like the more explosive guy, there's still not a lot of stats. But, you know, from watching those few games, it's also a little bit because there's only, you know, 25 passing attempts a game on average. It seems like those guys are really, really talented, but just kind of how Jim Chaney likes to run the show, there's not a lot of as much opportunity as there would be for maybe some other offenses around the conference and even the country. But what do those guys do well? Is it, do they take advantage of one-on-one opportunities because people respect playing against Swift and Holyfield so much, or are they able to kind of, you know, get ready and or get free and underneath and kind of take the ball and run with it from there?
So the wide receiver core is kind of interesting because there is a lot of names there, and as you said, no real star has emerged. Riley Ridley's probably the best pro prospect in that group right now. He's obviously Calvin Ridley's brother, who's playing here with the Atlanta Falcons and the former Alabama star. I think almost for sure Ridley is going to leave school after this year. I shouldn't say for sure because he hasn't announced that yet. But of all the juniors for Georgia, I think Ridley's the most likely to go to the NFL draft. And I'm guessing he'll probably be a pretty, relatively high draft pick. I don't think a first round pick necessarily, but a relatively high draft pick. I think he's pretty talented, but you know, the numbers aren't, you know, explosive necessarily. Mecole Hardman is very fast. That's his obviously biggest weapon. He's a real sprinter. He and Terry Godwin were both five-star prospects coming out of high school, but they were like five-star athletes more so than wide receivers by trade. They were both kind of like Wildcat-style quarterbacks a lot at the high school level, especially Hardman, who ran that almost exclusively coming out for the class 2016. Given the fact that they're athletic but not necessarily growing up playing the receiver position, they've had a couple of issues here and there over the course of their career. Hardman's had some drops. I think Godwin's at times been a little bit frustrated that he hasn't been more involved in the offense. You know, he kind of comes in and goes in spurts in terms of how much he's used. The real bright spot this year for Georgia's wide receiver position has been number 9, J.J. Holloman, who was a sophomore on this year's team. And this was not a guy who was like a top, 10 receiver in the country or anything like that for the class of 2017. He was a 4-star, just a pretty solid recruit. But, man, has he come on. He's Georgia's most physical receiver, which is really important in this offense. And he has just had a real nose for going out and getting the football. I don't have the stats in front of me, so I can't tell you, what the overall yards have been. But I can tell you that when Georgia has needed to make some big catches here over the course of the season, Holloman became the guy who was making a lot of those a whole lot more frequently. And Holloman emerging is one of the reasons why you may notice Demetrius Robertson on Georgia's roster. That's a former freshman All-American at Cal back in 2016. Mm-hmm. Was injured for most of 2017. He doesn't play at all at Georgia. And, maybe one day he will. As it stands right now, he's really not on the field whatsoever. Was some at the beginning of the season. He's not on the field right now. And I think part of the issue is a guy like Holloman is just taking some of the snaps that Robertson could have gotten.
And then one other thing, this is a guy we talked about earlier, but DeAndre Swift's got receiver numbers that, he's got better, more catches than Terry Godwin and almost as many as the leading tight end. How does he kind of factor into the passing game? I know that's kind of backtracking a little bit, but since we're talking about guys getting into the open field, how does DeAndre Swift factor in? Because I know I've seen him run some motion out from a backfield spot and sometimes get it out of the backfield. What is he just that good of an all-around player to where he can kind of be a receiver for Georgia as well?
Yeah, he kind of reminds you of that prototypical NFL running back right now, where like those guys are all catching the ball all the time on Sundays. Swift is really good at doing that. Sometimes it's just the traditional dump off stuff, because that's the check down option, and sometimes it seems like that was sort of like the primary idea to begin with. Swift's just really good at doing a lot of that kind of stuff. Another guy for Georgia that can also do some of that some, but it's not going to play in this game, is James Cook. A lot of your audience will know Dalvin Cook, obviously the former very good Florida State running back and now in the NFL. James is Dalvin's brother, but he's also dealing with an injury. I don't even think he'd travel with the team. So that's another one of those, running back types that can – almost line up and play a slot receiver. lined up in that slot some for Georgia. But James Cook is not going to play this game.
So that brings you to the big boys up front. And I've said this before, but the offensive line, I feel like, is the biggest key. And you've talked about how they've recruited there. And an offensive line can make a bad quarterback decent, a decent quarterback good, a good quarterback great, and a great quarterback a Heisman. This offensive line is a very good offensive line, right? But they're just very young. But it kind of shows with Lamont Galliard how important that center position is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Galliard is a guy that, I mean, he really emerged to become, you know, I think, you know, one of the better centers in the SEC after not really being that heralded, you know, as a recruit. He's just really stepped up and he's done well. And when Ben Cleveland is healthy at right guard, Georgia has a really nice scenario up the middle with its guards and tackle. Solomon Kinley, the left guard, has had, I would say, an okay year. But, you know, the real issue with Georgia's offensive line, one of the things that can be challenging, you know, for Texas to deal with is the fact they're just gigantic. I mean, Georgia does not recruit average size offensive linemen anymore. They're just giants. And even against Alabama, you know, at times you saw, you know, Georgia, you know, being able to, you know, very effectively protect for Fromm and, you know, open up situations in the running game, even against some really talented Alabama defensive linemen, just because, you know, size is just a really difficult thing to deal with. And Georgia just has these giant, giant offensive linemen. It is, I would say, you know, almost without a doubt, one of the true strengths of Georgia's roster is what it's done with its offensive line.
For sure. And I think that they may be one of the better matchups for Georgia because Texas, when they run out their starting defensive line, they have a, you know, Charles Menehu, who, though he plays the 3-4 end spot really, really well, that's probably not where he projects to the next level. Brecken Hager, who's probably better suited for an outside linebacker and a, you know, in a more sturdy 3-4. And then, you know, Chris Nelson, who's pretty good at nose tackle, but he's a step down from Puna Ford last year. So that's kind of the spot I see where George is really going to be able to get to the second level. And then they'll find a guy like Gary Johnson, who, though he's pretty good for playing linebacker in the Big 12, he's not used to having a guy who weighs literally 100 more pounds coming right at him. So that'll be real interesting to see how Texas tries to attack that because, you know, they've seen I formation this year because Baylor ran it a little bit. They've seen, you know, Kansas State ran that Snyder ball offense that involves basically the single wing. So they're used to some, you know, beef and bruising running games, but I'm not sure they've seen anything like this Georgia offensive line this year. Then again, there are not very many teams in the country who can do what Georgia does with that.
Yeah, that's really
smart
interesting
level of recruiting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, Andrew Thomas, which is a left tackle, I'm not a draft expert, but I think there's a chance that as a junior next season, he could exit and be like a top 10 pick or something like that. I mean, I think he's just a, you know, otherworldly talent. And Georgia's, you mentioned being young, Georgia started right tackle as Isaiah Wilson, who was a five-star prospect out of Brooklyn, New York. Georgia hasn't gotten a lot of players out of New York, as you might imagine, but he is from Brooklyn. And, you know, he wasn't ready last year. He was probably too big, too heavy. The humidity of Georgia wore him out last summer, but or 2 summers ago. But he has come on to his own this year and has been really solid for Georgia. I mentioned the Ben Cleveland injury. The other thing is Georgia has played a lot this season without Cade Mays. And the honest truth is, you know, I didn't think his injury was supposed to be all that severe. It's like a stinger or something like that. He's ended up missing, you know, several games, more than I would have expected him to miss. I can't really even begin to tell you if he's going to play against Texas or not, but that's a freshman that has played at least three offensive line positions for Georgia this season. I think he's played both tackle some and right guard, could have probably played at least four positions. He could have probably played left guard and probably would have had he been healthy, you know, against Alabama. You know, had a very good offensive line this season, but has dealt with some significant injuries because even Andrew Thomas missed some time at the very beginning of the season. So they've had to shuffle some guys in and around there a little bit and have really leaned on a lot of young players, but they've had to, you know, kind of be able to do that.
Yeah. And to give your point a little bit more teeth, I went ahead and found the height and weight of each of these guys up front. Left tackle, 6'5", 320. Left guard, 6'4", 336. Center, 6'2", 305. He's the smallest guy on the line. Your right guard, 6'4", 330. And your right tackle is 6'7", 345. So, you know, there's some big boys up front. But I do have a question about the youth up front. Has there been any inconsistency up front, or has it just been daisies and, you know, roses up front with the freshmen and sophomores coming in and just playing lights out? Or has there been, you know, some growing pains here and there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, you can go a lot of things for Georgia going to go back to the LSU game where, you know, that group did not have a great day that day, and really no one, you know, did. For whatever reason, Georgia just played terrible against LSU this season. But so it's not all been perfect necessarily. And, you know, this group has had to gel a little bit over the course of the season. But you know, it's certainly worked out well here at the end. I mean, you know, Georgia, if you want to go back and look, because last year the Georgia offensive line wasn't quite as talented as it is this year, but it's still pretty good. So, you know, obviously it hasn't been a perfect season. And obviously, you know, bring the extra, you know, extra pass rusher in a speed situation. That's going to be a challenge for some of these big guys here. But they have rounded into form over the course of the season for sure.
I guess kind of the last part of this offense, and one thing that I really, really like about Georgia's offense, because I remember him back as a recruit in the class of 2015. I remember Texas and Charlie Strong had a lot of interest in him at the time, and I watched this film and thought, man, this guy's going to be playing in the NFL someday. And I don't normally kind of jump to those conclusions, but he's one of the kids that I did for, and that was Isaac Nauta. I saw the play against Tennessee, his, you know, whiff on a block and then kind of turn that into a touchdown rush. But other than that, how big a part has he and the other tight ends been in this Georgia offense this year?
Yeah, it's a great question, because for a lot of fans, it's kind of a frustrating subplot, the sometimes lack of tight end involvement. Now, it seems like Nauta has been used a lot more as the season's progressed. I do think he's eventually going to play in the NFL, even though statistically speaking, his Georgia career has probably not been what you think it probably should be. But he is a very talented player, and he's actually not just a tight end. Charlie Werner is another athletic guy, not quite as highly recruited as Nauta was, but still pretty highly recruited from Georgia. He's a Georgia legacy, so he probably wasn't really on anybody else's you know, radar. He was destined for Georgia all the way along. He's number 89, and he hasn't been used as much as Nauta, but he's also pretty athletic as well. So Georgia's got, you know, pretty talented athletic tight ends. For whatever reason, it doesn't always seem to use them. But here's a weird thing to watch for, and I don't know why this is. I mentioned before Georgia's propensity for going hurry up near the end of the half. For whatever reason, that almost always yields opportunities for Nauta. There have been moments this season where, you know, in a hurry up 2-minute situation, they've hit Nauta on like 4 consecutive plays where, you know, he may go 3 games without getting 4 catches sometimes. So it's been kind of unusual in the manner in which they did, you know, have used him. But he did catch a pass in the SEC championship game. It was beautiful. You know, situation where he outrun Dale Moses, who's just a tremendous talented linebacker for Alabama. And, you know, he really looked like the former 5-star athlete doing that. So, you know, not as a real weapon for Georgia, but for whatever reason, they just have not always used those tight ends like you think you should when you've got someone like that, who I would say almost for sure is not only going to, you know, play in the NFL, I think NFL team is going to really. For some reason, Georgia doesn't always do that.
So that leads us to the last part of the offense here with the how. So, Brandon, real quick, if you are Todd Orlando here, how do you take advantage of this Georgia offense? Where have they faltered? What would you do to try to slow them down?
Well, the one thing that, and I know this is kind of, you know, funny, but the one area in which Georgia actually has been pretty weak this season is in goal line situations. And obviously, if you march the ball down the field, you've done something wrong defensively. But it's actually been pretty amazing how statistically inept Georgia has been down near the goal line. I think at times Georgia has just not known what it wants to do down there. There was a sequence against Florida where it ran at least 6 plays, maybe 7 plays, because of some penalties down at the goal line, still didn't score a touchdown. Had, you know, some of the same kind of stuff in the Kentucky game pop up. So, you know, that's one area in which Georgia can be had, because it probably just doesn't throw the ball enough down near the goal line. It's gotten way too conservative down there and had some issues with that. The other thing is, as good as Fromm is, you know, some teams have had success when they put Georgia in obvious passing situations. You know, you mentioned, you know, times when the offensive line maybe hasn't been perfect for Georgia. You know, scenarios where it's 3rd and 15, for instance, especially 3rd and 15, you know, in its own territory. You know, we've seen speed rushers get past some of those tackles and get back there on Fromm. You know, that's been an issue. I think it's gotten better over the course of the season, but that's been an issue from time to time. So, you know, obvious passing downs are still an area in which Georgia doesn't want to be there. The goal line stuff was at one point in time a huge issue for Georgia. And, you know, so scenarios like that are scenarios in which Georgia, for whatever reason, kind of has not really been at its best.
So, Joe, what do you think? How would you do it?
I think what you really need to do is have – I'm kind of thinking outside the box a little bit, and I know that Breckenhager may be like a fan favorite, but I think you really need to bulk up on the defensive line here. I think this is, you know, Breckenhager, for as much effort as he gives per play, you saw, you know, what was considered the best offensive line in the country in Oklahoma just have his way, have their way with him. And I think that, you know, matched up against guys, like I said, that are, you know, 60 to maybe 70 pounds bigger than Breckenhager, this may not be the game for him, especially putting his hand in the dirt. I think you really have to kind of maybe go a little bit against tendency with the defensive line, bulk up a little bit more, and, you know, really have guys like maybe Taquan Graham, you know, he's a 6'3", 280-pound guy instead of a 6'3", 255-pound guy there in the middle, or there at least on the edges, because this Texas defense, it's very much designed to free up space for the linebackers, and that kind of has to do with defensive linemen, you know, maybe taking on two guys. I don't have – you know, a lot of trust that Breckenhager could occupy two guys worth of attention. And I think you may need to make an adjustment there in order to do that. Whereas DeAndre Baker may not be playing. Both of Texas' senior corners are in Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis. And, you know, I think a lot of the Big 12 style play versus SEC style play is overplayed, especially with offense. But at the same time, you know, there were some really good receivers this year in the Big 12, guys like Hollywood Brown, CeeDee Lamb, the list goes on and on. And Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis had to do all that, had to take on all of them. Some did well at some points, didn't do well at other points. But those are two guys that you could think can play reputably well against these Georgia receivers. I know I watched in the games I watched, there was a lot of screens thrown quickly to the perimeter by Jake Fromm. And that's a place where Texas has actually done really, really well this year. They Chris Boyd and even Anthony Cook, his backup, they do a really good job of breaking up screens. I think if you leave your corners a little bit on islands, have faith that Brandon Jones can play in the box, and, you know, hopefully a healthy Caden Stearns can patrol the back end like he's really good at. So that way you have as many numbers in the box to deal with that passing game and hope that, you know, what your deal with that running game and hope that, you know, all that passing you saw throughout the year doesn't shock you when you see it coming from red and black instead of maybe crimson and cream or West Virginia blue and gold, that, oh yeah, this looks a little familiar, let's just stop the run.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the way Texas wins this game is by forcing it into a Big 12 style matchup instead of an SEC style matchup, which means force them to pass. Play the run, force them to pass, and if it turns into a shootout, then I would pick Texas in that one. But if it turns into a ground and pound, then it's Georgia's ball game. That's how I feel. So you're right, force them to pass, but also make sure that they don't turn those efficient short passes into those big gains like Mecole Hardman tends to do. So sure, tackling on wide receivers and really trying to stuff the running backs here. That's how I think Texas should take this down. So let's go ahead and move on to the defense. Brandon, tell me, Kirby Smart side of the ball, what do they do over there? What is their MO?
Well, the one thing that's obviously been a great luxury of all season long is DeAndre Baker, which Georgia's not going to have for this game. I mean, Kirby, as you mentioned, he loves not only defense, but he loves, you know, secondary play. probably more so than anything else. And Baker has just locked down half the field for Georgia all season long. He is one of those highly regarded players that I think this season has really lived up to the hype. I think he's been great for Georgia. Not having him, it's going to be really weird because it's been a long time since Georgia played a game without Baker. So that's going to be a big issue. They don't run the rush to passer necessarily all that great. You know, there is no Roquan Smith in that linebacking core anymore, the way that was obviously a big issue in 2017. This is overall just a collection of really solid players at virtually every position, but it is not, other than Baker, probably, you know, loaded with what you might think of right now as like those, you know, elite guys you're going to be watching a lot on Sundays. You know, one of those guys may emerge over the course of the next couple of years from this group. As it stands right now, though, other than Baker, it's a lot of, you know, good, probably, you know, just south of, you know, great individual names.
So let's go ahead and talk about the who then. The defensive line, we'll start off there. It's very deep, kind of like the wide receiver position, right, where there's a lot of names, and I just don't know who's going to start there or what's going to happen there. Except for I do know that Jonathan Ledbetter will be your defensive end because that guy has been a great threat. And also, I kind of want to throw DeAndre Walker into that mix because he's a glorified defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with DeAndre Walker is if you go back and look at Jalen Hurts in the SEC game, you know, people see the success that he had. But what people don't realize is that DeAndre Walker was actually, I believe, in you can, you know, check this for yourself, but I believe that DeAndre Walker, because of an injury, was off the field for every snap that Jalen Hurts took. To his final play, Walker also got injured as well. And so you see right there, you know, just how big of a loss that is for Georgia because it wasn't able to contain, you know, Hurts very well with Walker off the field. So he's one of those guys that grew into a bigger role this season and, you know, as a situational pass rusher in 2017, but kind of a jack of all trades for Georgia in 2018. He really responded in a big way in that regard. And Ledbetter is just one of the real leaders on this team, a guy that, you know, can kind of move around a little bit as a classic 3-4 defensive end, can sometimes kind of slide inside and give Georgia a little bit of an extra pass rush up the middle. But for the most part, is just, you know, just really, really good and really versatile. They don't really use him as an outside linebacker for the most part. Ledbetter stays on the defensive line, but he's a guy that is just incredibly versatile and whose leadership for Georgia has been just really, really important this season.
I guess kind of in that line, what will we see up front from Georgia? Will we see him with his hand in the dirt and, you know, maybe in a five with a three and a one and another five technique? Will we see, you know, maybe some three down linemen? What do we kind of see on the DL from the,
yeah, that's a lot of the way that, that Ledbetter goes about his business. He's almost always, you know, kind of hand down there in that regard. And then, you know, another name to know in terms of, you know, Georgia at its best with its defensive line is Jordan Davis. That's another guy that's dealing with an injury right now. And, you know, ironically, Davis is one of the less heralded recruits probably on the entire roster. I think he's only a, you know, three-star prospect coming out of high school. But he has really been Georgia's sort of space-eating nose, you know, man this season. Came on, you know, second half of the year. He's dealt with an injury. You know, I guess there's a chance that he does play on Tuesday in the Sugar Bowl, but he has definitely been Georgia's number one weapon at stopping the run in kind of that, you know, sort of second half of the year. And, you know, clearly whatever Georgia's best defensive line is involves Davis there in the middle for sure.
So let's get on to the linebackers because, again, DeAndre Walker is on that, and he is a stud. I really do enjoy watching DeAndre Walker play. But and also because the linebackers seem to be the unit that really kind of ties everything together for Georgia. They're sixth in the nation in havoc rate. They are all over the field. They use them in pass protection. They use them in pass rush, run gap protection, run blitzes, everything. Kind of goes through those linebackers in this defense. Who are the names we need to keep an eye on, and what do they do best?
Well, first of all, I'm actually surprised to hear they're sixth in havoc rate because that's not really the way that I think of this Georgia group this season. They have not had what I think of as a ton of tackles for loss, and certainly haven't had a ton of sacks. That number is actually a little surprising to me. And, you know, I guess when you talk about, you know, names to know, it's really more about, you know, the name that's not there anymore. You know, as I said before, there's just no Roquan Smith there. You know, Tay Crowder and, you know, guys like that have done, you know, pretty well. The most talented players for Georgia is linebacking core, and it'll be interesting to see how much they do play. Guys like Channing Kendall, a freshman, you know, that's a guy that is going to be a huge star one day. But, you know, it's, you know, just tough to play that inside linebacker position as a freshman at the high, you know, college football level. So, you know, he hasn't necessarily, you know, had, you know, those big moments. I think one day Quay Walker is going to be, you know, that kind of guy there as well. Adam Anderson's a freshman, number 56, who they've used, you know, a good bit more as the season's progressed. And I think that, you know, he's certainly a load to deal with because he's so tall. But when it comes to like the really, you know, talented, you know, guys for Georgia, they're in that regard. They're almost all freshmen. Monty Rice, who is probably Georgia's best run stopping linebacker, is another guy that Georgia did not have final few games, did not play against Alabama. He actually got hurt during warmups before the UMass game. So frustrating from Georgia's perspective that he got hurt. My guess is he'll be fine to play against Texas, but that's a guy been spectacular in terms of being there, making those kind of highlight plays with Roquan Wood a year ago, but is just crucial for the run stopping situation. You know, Georgia's, I think, best overall situation in that interior linebacker situation is pairing a guy like Rice, who's good at stopping the run, with one of those younger, dynamic playmaker type guys. Next season, that's what Georgia's going to do a lot more of. It's just a matter of, are they seasoned enough there with some of those young kids to do that against Texas? The odds are probably not.
And then moving to the very backfield, we'll get to the biggest news right away with DeAndre Baker. Who's going to be in his place? And I mean, how do you really quantify losing the best defensive back in the country?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, obviously, Tyson Campbell will be the cornerback that starts here. And Campbell is a five-star freshman and was a starter at the beginning of the year for Georgia. He got benched probably two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the season, and his replacement was Eric Stokes, and Stokes is also going to start in this game. He was only slated to start. Stokes has actually played pretty well for Georgia, better than some people probably would have anticipated. Campbell's going to get another shot here with Baker not playing, and Campbell is really good. He's really, really fast. He just got beat a few times this year, so much so that, you know, Georgia decided to give him a look on the bench. One of the things that you can watch for in this game, for whatever reason, Campbell has gotten beat on trick plays a few times. I don't know if, you know, Texas ever runs like a Philly special or, you know, just a halfback option pass or something like that. But if they've ever considered running one, my guess is they'll probably try to run one on Campbell, because it seems like about four or five times this year, people have, you know, offensive coordinators have tried to take a shot at Campbell with some sort of, you know, trick play type situation. I don't know if he just get caught looking in the backfield or what, but he can run with anybody. And I know that Texas got really good wide receivers, but he can run with anybody. But he has been beaten a few times this year.
And then I guess one more question is, you know, with little Jordan Humphrey, his spot has been in the slot receiver position. Who's going to be the nickelback, or maybe, or I guess the nickelback, who's going to maybe have the responsibility of having to deal with number 84 for the Longhorns the most?
That's a really good question. One of the things you hear me say a lot is freshmen who've kind of gotten better over the course of the year. Otis Reese is a freshman who I'm guessing Georgia will play a lot more in that kind of slot role in the Sugar Bowl. Overall, Georgia's used a lot of different guys at what they call the star position, that nickelback spot this year. You know, William Poole's been there some earlier in the year. It became Tyreek McGee more throughout the second half of the season. But the most talented guy, for, you know, of all of that is Otis Reese. And I don't think there's, from Georgia's perspective, there's any reason not to use guys like that more. So it's going to be a good bit of Tyreek McGee probably there. And it'll probably be Otis Reese there some. Reese doesn't probably run quite as well as McGee does. He was a linebacker in high school, but he is certainly one of the safeties of the future for Georgia. And, you know, getting a little bit of a spot there and that, you know, that extra defensive back situation is something I could definitely see Georgia doing a little more of, because I think that he's about ready to really, you know, be ready to be a full-time player.
So that leads us right into the how of the defense. And again, if I was able to answer this or you were able to answer this, we would be making a lot more money than we do. But if you are Tom Herman, if you are Tim Beck or whoever or whatever is happening in the Texas offensive staff room, how do you go ahead and plan to get past this defense from Georgia?
So the one thing that you saw some teams do early in the year, even teams you wouldn't necessarily expect, teams like, say, Missouri, for instance, was, you know, earlier in the year, Georgia was capable of being run on. And if Jordan Davis is truly not 100%, then once again, I know that Texas does like to line up and run the football. I know that's a real priority for a Tom Herman. You know, there's certainly a chance that Texas can establish that against Georgia. The other thing is, you know, I mentioned, you know, the lack of overall explosiveness from those inside linebackers. We saw Jake Bentley, the South Carolina quarterback, early in the year, you know, have some, you know, real success with some of those like pop passes in the RPO game where you just simply kind of throw over the linebacker's head. Georgia wasn't, fully equipped to stop that. So this is a good Georgia defense, but it's not necessarily a completely invincible, you know, defense either. I mean, you know, you've seen some teams be able to run the football. I know Texas wants to do that. And like the old adage in football goes, you know, that sets up a lot of other opportunities here. So, I mean, I don't know that Texas, you know, needs to, you know, feel like it can't go with what it's tried to do against a lot of teams this season, which is certainly set up and stop the run because, you know, Georgia's, you know, as beefy as Georgia is along the offensive line, it's probably not dealing with quite as much, mass on its defensive line. At times this season, that's been noticeable.
So, Joe, what do you think? How do you do this?
I really think that, you know, to take advantage of what you may not of variables at corner for Georgia and what it kind of sounds like maybe some variables in athleticism at linebacker, I think you kind of have to stick to the game plan you've had all year. Texas, what they really like to do is, you know, throw to the perimeter early and often, get the ball in little Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson's hands in the screen game and let, you know, the other receivers block. And they've been really proficient at blocking this year. Devin Duvernay really kind of has had a quiet, great year. He's really reliable, both receiving and blocking, and that's been a strength. That's where Texas has picked up, you know, 4 to 5 yards per down, and, you know, that's how you move the sticks. One thing that Texas doesn't really do is, although, Brandon, you mentioned there's not much mass on the defensive line, there's not much mass on the offensive line for Texas. I mean, that's been the biggest complaint by a lot of the coaches this year, is that they know they're not getting a lot of push. They've been pretty darn solid in protection, which is why Sam Ellinger's had a really, almost spectacular year, I think you could say. And a lot of that has to do with protection, but the running game really hasn't taken off a ton, even as much as Tom Herman would want it to, and that's because they struggle to get push. So I really think that, you know, you get these really good Georgia athletes kind of moving, having to move around a lot, go sideline to sideline, maybe involve some fakes that they haven't done this year before, because there's sometimes Tom Herman, you know, gets cute, and there's sometimes Tom Herman gets smart. And he's been way cuter than smart this year when calling some trick plays. I think he just kind of needs to go with what has gotten him, you know, to the Sugar Bowl in his second year, and that's relying
on with the one who brought you.
That's relying on the screen game and relying on, you know, moving guys around in order to find matchups.
The other thing is, you know, Georgia, you know, does not like to blitz. That's Kirby Smart's, you know, and former defense coordinator Mel Tucker's big thing. They want to be able to rush with, you know, just four guys. They didn't want to be able to blitz. Against Alabama, I think they were in a situation where they had to disrupt Tua some, and they did. But there was a trade-off for that in which, you know, over the course of the game, it became easier for Alabama to run the football because Georgia got kind of worn down, and also because Georgia was, you know, all of a sudden a little bit limited with its personnel because it was trying to be creative with bringing the extra pass rusher from time to time. So in terms of, you know, Ellinger, who I think has had a really good season, at least the best I can tell, you know, having time to throw, there is a chance he does have time to throw in this game because, and this is especially true if Walker is not 100% or even not playing, having time to throw is something that Ellinger might actually have just because, you know, Georgia, for as good as it's been, and They just have not been great at rushing the passer this year. I think that's one of those things that Georgia fans are hoping for a major upgrade on in next year, and probably will get it. At least there's a chance that it will. But just not been a great pass rushing team.
Yeah, and that was one of my big points for the how is DeAndre Walker needs to be nullified in this pass rush, because otherwise Texas is going to have some trouble. But the thing about Texas is when they've had trouble with pass rushers is when they're big guys who are bull rushing the tackles. That's not what DeAndre Walker is. He's a guy who, if you're not technically sound, he's going to take advantage of you. And that's what Texas has on the tackles is guys who are more technically sound. So if you can nullify DeAndre Walker, get yourself some passing time, then I think you're opening up the air. But Texas needs to find some way to get balance in this game, because if they can get Georgia guessing on defense and turn this into what I was talking about, a shootout through the air, not become one-dimensional because they can't run the ball, then I think Texas is good. Because that's what happened against Oklahoma. Texas became one-dimensional because they couldn't run the ball and Oklahoma just keyed on it. So yes, Texas needs to turn this into a shootout. But before we leave you off, Brandon, or you leave us, I want to get one quick story about Rodrigo Blankenship. I want to hear your favorite story about the kicker.
Well, first of all, we get a chance to see the team, come in every single Saturday for home games. And Georgia's tradition under Kirby Smart is everyone dresses up. And, Rodrigo's always Natalie attire. He's got the bow tie on. He's got like kind of the classic, sort of a retro style suit. Obviously the specs are very well known when it comes to him. He's just a really kind of quirky personality. But I think behind that, though, almost anyone who knows him will tell you this is a genuinely good guy, a guy that has overcome a lot of Georgia. He's not on scholarship for a long time, finally earned his way on scholarship and has made the most of that. I'd love for you to be in Sanford Stadium in Athens to hear a game at one point in time when they announced the starting lineups, because Blankenship's ovation from the crowd is just as loud as Jake Fromm. And, obviously you imagine, quarterback's always, most popular guy with the crowd and everything like that. But Blankenship's ovation roar when they announce his name as a starter is as loud as anybody else on the team. I would say that he's the most popular kicker, certainly, that Georgia's probably ever had. I don't know if he's Georgia's best kicker or not. They've had a couple good ones over the decades. But he is an incredible, incredible fan favorite.
Yeah. If you're a good specialist, then you will become quickly one of the most popular kids on campus. Just ask Michael Dixon or Justin Tucker. But, Brandon, thank you so much for coming on and staying on for longer than we were expecting. Good sport about it. But, again, where can we find you on Twitter, on the internet? Where can we find your stuff?
So at Dog Nation Daily is the best way to find me on Twitter. And then we post the show every day as a podcast at Dog Nation, and also on the Dog Nation video channels, Dog Nation on Facebook, Dog Nation on YouTube, and just pretty much anything with Dog Nation will get you to me at some point in time. And so if Texas fans want to know a little bit more about the enemy intel here heading towards next week, Dog Nation is a pretty good place to go.
So you do a podcast every day?
Yeah, every day, every day.
How do you take care of your voice, man? That's crazy.
You know what? It's there's some days I guess a little easier than others, but we have a good time, and certainly there are days when you feel like it's you've certainly put a little bit of strain on the vocal cords there, but luckily we've been able to power through thus far.
Well, thank you again, Brandon, for coming on, man. It's been awesome talking to you, and look forward to seeing you in New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys have safe travels over, and we will look forward to seeing you there in New Orleans.
Take care.
Thanks again to Brandon. Brandon was a tremendous guest. Really knows his stuff. That was awesome, right, Joe?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the most informative guests we had on, and I think a great way to cap it off for what will be our final game this year.
Yeah. And next show, obviously, we're going to be talking about the quarterback stuff, assessing the quarterback room for next year, going over just the entire season in a whole, as we'll have a better picture of, what we talked about at the beginning of the show in terms of the optics of the season and how everything went down, and then going into National Signing Day number 2 for recruiting. But on that note, we're going to head off there. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man, Joe Cook, where can we find you?
You can find me on Inside Texas, or you can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
And you guys can find both of us right here on the Hornscast, what you're listening to on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Twitter, Facebook, anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you will find the Hornscast. On that note, thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.